Welcome to the Super Duper Podcast Network's presentation of the Rebel Alliance Briefing Room Podcast. We'll be talking all about Star Wars. I am Kyle John Johansson, and this is Andrew Scott Sutton.
Howdy.
This is our website where you can play current and past episodes or learn how to load the Rebel Alliance Briefing Room Podcast onto your Android or Apple phone and tablet. We also have links to our socials and polls. That's https://radr.kylejohansson.us. That's radr.kylejohansson.us. We are here to discuss Star Wars with you. Please participate by submitting your feedback now.
Feedback@kylejohansson.us. That's feedback@kylejohansson.us.
Hello, everybody.
Today we're going to be reviewing Chapter 2, The Tribes of Tatooine of the Book of Boba Fett. We will go over some first impressions, and then we'll discuss the episode and give a recap and so on. So let me turn on the spoiler alert real quick. Spoiler alert. Danger, you're about to be spoiled. This is your spoiler alert. We're about to talk candidly and explicitly about some TV shows or movies. If you have not watched them, please fast forward to the appropriate section. You will not be warned again, because you will be spoiled. All right, they've been warned. Okay, so the next section is we basically give our first impression, just a really short first impression, and then we'll go into the full recap. Okay, so what'd you think about the episode in general?
In general, they upped their game from the first one.
It was a little better than the first one, I thought, too. It was there was a lot more detail that we were kind of hoping for in the first episode, I think. You know, we got to know a lot about the Tuskens, and that was, you know, I think that makes and shapes how the episode, or how Boba Fett is and all that. So, yeah, so I thought it was pretty good, too, and it was it was definitely better. And I, you know, I don't know about you, but I've read a lot of feedback from major news sources that say that it wasn't very good. The first episode wasn't very good. And I think they kind of, like you said, they kind of made up for it in the second episode. So we're going to do a Juan's Cantina, and then we're going to do the full recap. So it'll be this will be a long break.
We are proud to welcome our latest sponsor, Juan's Cantina, where every first week of the month on the standard galactic calendar, we celebrate what the ancients call Cinco de Mayo. Come join us
in Juan's Cantina.
Food, mariachi music, and 34 flavors of margaritas.
Olé, olé, olé,
olé. Los Angeles Spaceport. On day two of the week is Taco Tuesday. All tacos are half the credit each. Enjoy with our house margaritas. Juan's Cantina also serves the galactic famous Dos Camarones Azul Cereza, imported directly from Kessel. Thank you again for
being awesome. I'm drinking one of those beers right now. So
that's great. I'll have a water.
No monster. Today we will be reviewing and discussing the Book of Boba Fett, Chapter 2, The Tribes of Tatooine. The episode opens with a high angle short of the desert landscape outside of Jabba's palace. The camera zooms in
on
armed Fennec Shand leading a captured assassin to the castle. The two walk through the giant blast doors, gates, and into the throne room where Boba Fett holds court. Fett demands to know who sent him and what were his orders. The two Gamorrean guards and droids stand in the background. When the assassin refuses to speak, Fett orders one of the Gamorreans to behead him. Before the Gamorrean can slit his throat, the prisoner curses at him in Huttese. Fett chastises the prisoner for being ungrateful that they spared his life.
The droid explains that the prisoner is from the Order of the Nightwind, an assassin for hire. The droid says that there is no way the prisoner will talk, adding that he fears no man. Fett and Shan express disagreement. Shan suggests that the prisoner will fear the Rancor and presses the button to activate the trap door to the Rancor's den. As the gates open below, the assassin panics and tells Fett and Shan that he was sent by the mayor of Mos Espa. He begs for his life. However, Shan reveals the Rancor den is empty and decries the only creature in the Rancor den is a small mouse. Shan suggests to Fett they revisit the mayor. Fett and Shan lead the captured assassin through the streets of Mos Espa, accompanied by the two Grimorian guards. Their presence is noticed by several Transdosians who eye them. The group walk through town where Fett tells the city clerk that he is here to see the mayor. When the receptionist asks if he has an appointment, Fett responds with that he found one of his stray pets and that he is here to return it to his master. Reception tells him to wait, but is overruled by the Twi'lek Majordomo, who apologizes for the lack of pomp. The Majordomo claims that the mayor is indisposed for the rest of the week, but Fett forces his way into the mayor's throne room. The Ithorian mayor, Mok Shaz, demands foreign explanations for Fett's unscheduled visit. The Majordomo reminds Shaz that Fett is a new Dayamo. Fett demands to know why the mayor sent the assassin to kill him. Shaz explains that the assassin is a member of the Order of the Night. When Fett asks the mayor if this is an omission, one of the mayor's guards shoots the assassin. With the Majordomo translating, Shaz says that the Order of the Nightwind are not allowed to operate outside of hut space, and thanks to Fett for returning him in. He orders his guards to bring him his reward. Fett replies that he is not a bounty hunter anymore, but Shaz says he heard otherwise. Shaz remarks that Fett sits on the throne of his former employer, prompting Fett to respond that Bib Fortuna was not his employer. Shaz clarifies that he was referring to Java. Fett replies that he will take his payment as a belated tribute. He adds the mayor should remember that he serves as long as the Dayamo of Tatooine decides. Shaz asks Fett to consider who really sent the Nightwind assassins and claims that he has no motive for killing Fett. Shaz tells Fett that he serves at his pleasure. Fett warns him that he is not a fool and those who have crossed him no longer breathe. As advice, Shaz warns Fett that running a family is more complicated than bounty hunting. Shaz tells him to go to Garza's sanctuary to get an idea of what he means. Fett and his entourage visit Garza's sanctuary, which is full of droids and patrons. Taking off his helmet, Fett meets with Garza, who offers him a table. Fett explains the mayor, Mok Shaz, sent him here on the pretext that there is something that he should know. When Garza gives a nervous look, Fett remarks that she is sweating like a Goomta on Mustafar, for their late cousin Jabba's bequest. Fett replies that he heard the twins were preoccupied with Nal Hutta to bother with Tatooine. The cantina grows silent as they hear drones beating in the background. Fett, Shan, and the Grimorians walk outside to see a procession carrying two huts on a litter. As the litter approaches Fett's entourage, the Hutt brothers tell Fett that they have business to discuss. Fett replies that this is his territory, prompting the Hutt brothers to reiterate that his Jabba's territory and now theirs. One of the drummers presents a tablet stating the Hutt's claim to Tatooine. Fett rejects their claim, stating that he is the Dayamo of Mos Espa. The Hutts laugh, with the brother asking if this is so. An armed black Wookiee known as Black Kuris Satan, who is armed with a heavy blaster, approaches Fett and his entourage. Fett is not intimidated, stating that these are not the death pits of Duar, and that he is not a sleeping Transdosian guard. Fett replies that Mos Espa is his territory and tells them to go back to Nal Hutta. The Hutt sister speaks in Huttese. Her brother replies that Fett is upset with his sister, and that he is more patient than her, who wants to kill him. As Shan and Kuris Satan load their weapons, Fett explains that Jabba is gone, and that his former Majordomo, Bib Fortuna, surpassed his territory since Fett killed him. All that belongs to Fortuna now belongs to him. Fett says that they will have to kill him for it, the two Hutt siblings speak. The Hutt brother says that bloodshed is bad for business, and that this matter can be dealt with later. He wants Fett to sleep lightly. As drummers beat their drums, the two Hutts withdraw. Black Kuris Satan growls at Fett before walking away. Shan tells Fett that they will have to get permission to kill them since these are Hutts. Fett suggests that the matter is settled, but accepts that it is not yet over. While Fett is resting in his Bacta tank, he experiences a flashback of this time with the Tusken Raiders. While a Banta plows the desert, he learns how to wield the Gaffree stick from a Tusken. The older Tusken teaches him to hold the stick properly before parrying. She knocks the staff out of Fett's hand before telling him to practice again. He asks the Tusken to show him. Other Tuskens search the desert, sands for gourds.
While the two are practicing, a mastiff finds some prey in the desert. The prey scurries into the desert with the Tuscan's massive hounds in pursuit. A Tuscan kills the unidentified prey with a rifle. The mastiffs feast on the creature. The animal's roar is heard in the background. The Tuscans take up position as an armored hover train approaches. Blasters bolt from the train, take out Avanta and several Tuscan raiders. The train then rides away into the desert. Several Tuscans are killed and wounded by the gunners. Fett watches as the Tuscans attend their wounded and dead. Later that night, the Tuscans cremate the fallen. Fett himself carries the remains of a young Tuscan youth, his parents filing his remains over the fire. Fett is visibly troubled by the plight of the Tuscan raiders. He drinks from a black melon and watches several speeder bikes pass their encampment. Fett speaks to the tribal elders, vowing to stop the train with a rifle and a stick. He promises to be back by morning. The chief is skeptical Fett will succeed, but lets him leave on his quest. Fett travels to the Toshi Station, which is frequented by Nikito miners. Along the patrons are Cammy Mestrap and Lay's Lonzer. One of the Nikos snatches food from their table and drinks one of their drinks. Lay's says, "This is not right," prompting the Nikito to ask if he said something. Lay's once again says, "This is not right." The Nikitos grab and restrain Lay's and Cammy. One of the Nikito beats him with a stun baton. However, they are interrupted by Fett. Fett walks into the cantina, armed with a Gadfrey stick and a rifle. The Nikito miners fetch melee weapons and attack Fett. Fett disarms one of the attackers. A second miner shoots at him, but Fett shoots him first. Lay's and Cammy take the opportunity to leave. Fett fights the remaining Nikito miners, wounding and killing some of them with his Gadfrey stick. He hurts one more through the window before stopping to drink. Fett then exits the cantina and inspects their speeder bikes. The following day, Fett leaves Toshi Station with several speeder bikes in tow. He returns to the Tuscan Raider camp. His arrival initially unnerves the Tuscans, who grab their rifles and go into defense position. The chief realizes this is Fett and tells them to stand down. The chief welcomes Fett, who tells them that the bikes are a gift for them. The Tuscans attempt to dismantle the bikes, but Fett tells them that they will teach him to ride so that they can stop the train. Later, Fett teaches the Tuscan Raiders how to operate the accelerator and brakes, likening the bikes to a Banta. A young Tuscan tries out the speeder bike, but reverses. Fett then leads the Tuscans on their first ride. The Tuscans initially struggle, but learn how to operate the bikes. He also trains them how to leap from bike and signal using a mirror. Fett also teaches them how to accelerate their speeder bikes through the desert. The Tuscans get better with handling bikes and leaping from vehicles. Fett continues practicing with the Gadfrey stick and learns how to knock the weapon out of his opponent's hand. A Tuscan sentry spots an approaching hover train. The Tuscans grab their weapons and jump on their speeder bikes. Others take up positions in the desert as the Tuscans entrench to exchange fire with the pike gunners. Fett and other Tuscan riders speed their bikes in pursuit of the train. The Tuscan signals to others lying in the hills. Hidden Tuscan snipers shoot several of the gunners. Some of the Tuscans on the bikes manage to board the train, but face resistance with gunners as some are killed. Fett rescues one and uses a grappling hook to latch onto the hover train. He also kills one of the pike gunners. They jump across the carriages and fight several emerging sentries. As they approach the train's engine, the pike guards take up position and fire on advancing Tuscans, taking some down. A Tuscan rams bike into one of the carriages, damaging one of the connectors. However, she fails to split the train carriage. The driver's droid accelerates the engine, causing the hover train to accelerate rapidly. They still manage to board the train and proceed to fight the pike gunners aboard, killing and throwing out several. They take the lead pike gunner and his companions. Realizing that the Tuscans are winning, the driver droid fires up the engine, causing a blast to knock off one of Fett's Tuscan allies. Fett fights with more pike guards near the train engine. In process, one of the pike is blasted by the engine and is thrown to the ground, crushed to death by the carriage. Fett forces his way onto the train engine, where he orders the driver droid to stop the vehicle. The spidery droid instead jumps out into the desert. Fett struggles to stop the train, but finds the brakes. He uses his Gadfrey stick to disable the ship's engine, causing it to break in the desert. The Tuscans shoot in a victory before proceeding to loot the train from weapons and merchandise. Several Tuscans guard the surviving captive pike gunners and guards. Fett demands to know who is the leader. The leading pike stands up and removes his mask. He asks Fett if they are going to kill him. Fett replies that it depends on how he answers the question. When Fett asks if he is carrying spice, the pike leader asks what he means by spice. Fett asks if he is carrying Sessan spice from the slave mines of Kessel. The pike leader asks, "What does the spice look like?" Just then, two Tuscans discover a crate of spice. Fett replies that he's not looking good for him. The pike leader says that they assumed the Tuscans were uncivilized raiders and that they were just trying to protect their route. Fett replies that the Dune Sea is no longer free for pikes to pass, since the Tuscans claim the territory as ancestral ground. He says that if they want to pass, a toll is to be paid to the Tuscans. He warns that any death dealt by traveling trains will be returned tenfold. Fett orders the pike leader to return to the pike syndicate with the new terms and adds that their lives are a gesture of their civility. He tells the pike to walk single file in a direction of the sun, explaining that it will lead to the anchorhead by the sunset. When the leader protests, that they will be killed, Fett reassures him that traveling under the protection of the Tuskens, no harm will come to them. When the Pike leader protests that they will die of thirst without water, Fett promises they will each be given a black melon, stating that they will survive on its milk as these people do. The Pikes leave while the Tuskens plunder the water carts. Later that night, the Tusken chief explains that the oceans of Tatooine have dried up, that they have stayed hidden. He says that the other tribes have survived by killing. Fett replies that they shouldn't have to hide since they are warriors. The Tusken chief replies that the off-worders have machines. Fett reassures them they now have machines and that they know every grain of sand in the Dune Sea. The Tusken chief gives Fett a gift, stating that he is a good guide. The gift turns out to be a lizard in a basket. The lizard climbs up into Fett's nostril. The chief explains that the lizard will guide him from inside his head. Fett's visions become blurry and his body convulses. He finds himself walking through the desert of Tatooine and sees a vision of trees and oceans. There are creatures with red eyes. Fett also experiences flashbacks of climb out through the maws of Sarlacc, as well as his childhood on Kamino, watching his father leave in Slave One. The vision ends with him merging while the oceans roar. The following day, Fett returns to the Tusken camp, where he is greeted by the young Tusken youth he befriended and his mastiff. Fett is greeted by the Tusken chief and his followers. The lizard emerges from his nostril. Fett remarks that he thought that part was part of the dream. The Tusken chief asks him to show him the branch. Fett presents the branch from his night journey to the Tuskens. They lead him inside a tent where Tuskens clothe him with a Tusken robe, scarves, and bandages. The cloak Fett emerges from the tent and faces his Tusken friends. The young Tusken walk beside him to a head in the desert towards a wrecked site. One of the Tuskens forges the branch into a new gaffrey stick. Fett helps him carve the weapon, which he also heats up in the oven, places pieces of metal on the stick, giving it an armored plating. The metal is dipped into the ovens. Later that night, Fett presents his new gaffrey stick to the rest of the clan. He parries with the rest of the Tuskens, who gather before a camp, and they dance around the fire.
Alright. You get that all, Scott? So, the first part was where Fennec returns the assassin and they interrogate him. You remember that part where, the droid says he's a Nightwind assassin and all that stuff?
Yeah.
The Nightwind is also the same people as those witches. They were witches of the Nightwind. You remember in the...
Yeah. In the...
Yeah.
Clone Wars or whatever?
Yeah, the Clone Wars.
Clone Wars, yeah.
Those were witches of the Nightwind, so I'm sure they're related in some fashion.
The Sith made them.
It's not clear. So I think they were like those witches were like a rogue version or something. They don't follow the same opinions or whatever. They're still evil, but and then they take the guy and walk him to the mayor's place or palace, whatever you want to call it. Uh-huh. And they go into the mayor and all that stuff, and you finally get to see who the mayor is. Did you think that's who you were thinking the mayor was? You still think the major domo is in charge instead?
I think he has a side item.
Yeah, he probably has a side gig or something, or yeah. side something going on.
Well,
stuff that the mayor doesn't really know.
Number two is always trying to undercut number one some way.
Yeah.
To get ahead.
And that's one of the things with the Sith is, as a Sith master, you're always worried that your second in command is going to take over and kill you. And that's the only way you can take over. That's kind of the same thing. It's kind of the same parallels. While they're there, the mayor tells them that he didn't really actually order them. There's a reason the assassins were ordered, and he tells him to go to the bar again that we've already seen, the cantina. Yeah. So we get to see the cantina and the owner, Garza, and she kind of tells him that the other Fets are claiming Jabba's throne. And then we get the scene where they all come in. That's the first thing that I have to say about that is, you know, that that thing that they were carrying the two huts on.
Yeah, the litter.
There wasn't enough people holding that.
No,
because there was two of them, and those things are huge, right?
Yeah,
it was like there was only like 6 or 8 people holding that thing. That can't be right. It's got to be more than that.
And you know, when they walked through to get to the mayor's, and they were looking around, all the lizard
yeah,
people, the
transnosians, yeah.
Yeah, and then you see then you see on the litter they're them carrying it. Some of them are carrying it.
Yeah. Some of them are slaves to the huts and stuff.
You know, yeah, it's kind of funny in that age when there was hover technology and they still used people to carry them.
Well, and maybe that's
that was the show. That was to show their power.
Yeah, and maybe, you know, there was hover technology on there. They just had the other people there, like you said, just to show power. So it was hovering, but they had, you know, the slaves holding it also, just maybe to steer and guide it or something. I don't know, because it doesn't make sense that there were so few people carrying it. So it had to be some sort of hover technology.
Mm-hmm.
And then we meet the big black Wookiee. I think that's the first time in
comic book. Comic book.
Yeah, he's in the comic books and all that stuff, but that's the first time we see him outside of the comic books. And you know what?
he looked at how Boba Fett and him looked at each other when they stood beside each other. That's because they work together.
They know each other a little bit, because that Wookiee is a bounty hunter also.
Uh-huh.
And they
partnered up on some jobs, and they were partners until the comic books, they partnered up until Darth Vader separated and sent them on separate jobs.
Right. And also, if you remember, like in Solo, we learned that Wookiees are really old. Some of them can get really old, a couple hundred years in age. This guy also was back in the Old Republic days, too. He's not that old, but he was, you know, back where what's his name was that trained Han Solo. Or not Han Solo. Why do I say that? I meant Obi-Wan Kenobi. His master.
Well, not Yoda.
Yeah. Liam Neeson. Yeah, exactly. He's been around for a while. So we have to remember that this guy is probably pushing like 100 and some years old when we see him in this scene.
He definitely
looks rough and tough, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's cool.
Yeah. Then Jabba and them argue about the rule, and then finally the Hutts basically say, "Well, it's not good for business to fight, so they're gonna leave it be for now." But we get a warning that says, you know, don't sleep heavily, because we're still coming for you. Yeah, and then I think
Boba should have just blown those slimy suckers off that litter.
Yeah, yeah, and that's we find out there's a reason why, because you have to have permission to kill a Hutt within Hutt space, I guess, or you could be captured and killed yourself. So. That's kind of what Finnick was talking about. There's a law in the whole area that if you attempt to kill a Hutt, then you know you've brought pain down to you and your whole entire family.
Yeah, that's also because they played both sides.
Right. And a good crime lord does, you know, a good crime lord plays multiple sides, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's that, and the Hutts are kind of the best at it. That's why they're so notorious. But all right, so then Fett goes back and he goes into the back to tank again and starts dreaming. And the rest of the show is about his dreams that he's having with about the Tusken Raiders and stuff that he lived with. You know, we see him living with the people and he's starting to learn how to fight with that Gaffrey stick is what they call it.
Yeah.
And he learns that he starts to learn, you know, the methods and the, and I guess you could say, you know, it's kind of like, almost like a martial art, what they do with that stick, you know, and how they use it and train. Don't you think it's kind of like a,
yeah, you see him, you see he's stepped up within the clan, because within those scenes you see other people digging for the melons.
Yeah. And they go out and look for him too. But I mean, he's basically becoming an apprentice. They're training him to be like them. And then the hover train comes by and starts shooting and killing people. We see that. Also, and
first, you know, I know my first thought or opinion on that was, it was. Hold on, that's like here in America when we went into Indian land killing buffalo, because first they were shooting at animals and stuff like that.
Yeah, so
that's what like first the... remind me of.
Kind of like the old West, basically. And
yeah.
And that's, you know, they tout this show as a space Western. So it's kind of trying to mimic that a little bit, I think, in that respect. So then they, Fett says that he's going to try to get justice. So he tells the leader that he's going to take a rifle and a stick and, go get some justice somewhere. And he goes out in the night and goes to this bar, this cantina. And this whole cantina thing is interesting because when we first see the scene, Fett's not there, right? So there's a girl and a guy sitting at a table. Mm-hmm. They're eating, and then all these minor people. And I want to point out that the girl and the guy, those are names that we learned in the first Star Wars movie, The New Hope. Mm-hmm. You remember when Luke said, hey, you know, his stepdad tells him that he has to work the evaporator things or whatever.
Yeah, but
he said, I had plans to go to Soshi Station and visit my friends. And he names these friends that are in there.
Yeah.
And those are that's a call out from the original movie. So, then Fett comes in and fights these guys because they're the guys that run the train, basically, or something like that.
No, they weren't on the train. They were just they're just different raiders because he wanted the bikes. The bikes and the train had nothing to do with each other.
That's right. He just wanted the bikes so that he could, because he wanted to use them for the train, to reattack the train. So he goes in and...
They were the people that were marking up on the first episode, marking up the water farm or whatever that was.
Yes. Same gang, basically.
Yeah.
So he goes in and knocks them out so he can take their bikes. You know, he inspects the bikes and stuff and brings them in. And since the leader didn't think Fett was coming back, they kind of almost, shoot at him. But then the leader realizes Fett's back and offers the bikes to the leader as a gift. And then we get into the funny part where he starts to train these guys how to ride these things. And, we get to see the little funny parts where they're trying to drive and going backwards. And
almost reminds me of the Force scene. It was a Jedi, Return of the Jedi.
Yep.
With Ewoos or Ewoks or...
Ewoks, yeah.
Ewoos, whatever. Ewoks.
Yeah, so that's what I was thinking too.
That's the exact same scene because Ewok went backwards.
Yeah, exactly. That's the one of the tricks to the bikes, I guess, is to figure out how to go forwards. yeah, so we see that, and we see him jumping from the bike from bike to bike multiple times, and that's, you know, kind of a funny part too, where they keep falling off and falling off and falling off, and finally figure it out. And I didn't realize right away when I first saw it that was different people jumping. It wasn't just the same person. It was,
yeah,
he was training all of them to be able to jump from bike to bike, you know, and all that. So they train for that, and they also train for more fighting and stuff like that.
The first, you go back to the training, and plus the first one that made it to jump the bike was the one, yep, that was training him with the gaffy stick, and the one that trained with the gaffy stick considered female.
Yes, which is interesting, because you can't really tell with what they wear if they're female or not, but that one was.
I think it's adornment, and how the adornment is put on.
Yeah, maybe the different colorings and stuff. I don't know. Because she had red or something on their stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, after the training and whatever, we hear the hover train again. And they go on, get on the bikes because they're ready. So they get on the bikes and start to attack the train. We have a big scene where they're attacking the train and such. Again, with the cowboys in the Old West and all that stuff.
So the young one in the mirror.
Yeah.
Was he signaling, or was he blinding the shooters on the train?
He was signaling other raiders that were further away.
Okay.
They were all basically, you saw kind of, they were strung along the path of the train. So he was signaling ones that were further out from, you know, his position or whatever. So they were doing that. And then, you know, apparently the training was good because they were able to capture the train. There's a funny part, I think, when Fett gets in the engine room with that droid, and the droid,
I'm out.
Looks at him and jumps out the window. I was like, what? No.
What? I'm out. I didn't sign up for this shit.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. And
he's like, what?
He uses his stick to get leverage to basically stop the train, I guess.
Yeah.
And then they stop the train, of course, and then Fett starts interrogating people, and he gets to the leader, and it's interesting because we've seen, so these people are Pikes, and the Pikes are notorious for being a syndicate that runs spice throughout the galaxy.
Yeah.
And we see them in the Solo movie that they were Pikes in there.
Yeah.
And then there's some Pikes and a couple other things, but they were very brief moments. But you know, we get to see a lot more of them, and we get to actually see them talk. I don't know if I've ever seen them talk in any of the movies. You know, they talk in the same language as Fett does, or at least that's the way they interpret it in the movie. But
yeah,
Fett says that they can no longer go through the area without paying a toll, which is interesting also because we hear about that in one of the movies also. We hear about in the future movies after Return of the Jedi, where
Mando.
Yeah, it's in Mando too, where they talk about
They gave away the binoculars.
Right, they gave him the binoculars as told to go into the area, basically.
Yeah,
which is an interesting tie-in. It's really nice to see that, you know, the writers and all that stuff can bring in all these different properties and
they're honoring they're honoring what's already been done.
Exactly, and that's nice to see. A lot of times you see stuff like this, and it's like a one-off thing, and they.
Yeah,
you know, they talk about same things, but they don't tie together very well. And this, they do a very good job of bringing them together.
Yeah, the director on this is that female, that younger female. I can't remember her name. So
it wasn't Opie's daughter. You're thinking, or is that different?
I don't know. I've seen a picture of her.
Yeah.
But the train scene, that whole train scene, the best Star Wars action. That's like premier movie stuff right there.
There's some pretty good fight scenes and climbing on the train.
Yeah.
And
that was the female. It is a female. Exactly. Let the female go rip through the jump. She's the one that made it through on the train.
Right.
Throwing them out.
Pretty good action.
It must have been, you know, the time of the month.
Yeah. And then, you know, after that, you know, they loot the train some more and, you know, start collecting all the water out of the water tank and all that, and send the Pikes off on their own to go to a spaceport to leave, because they're not going to let them use the train. Because
he said follow the second son, because Tatooine has
two sons. Yeah.
Two sons.
Yeah. I think one of the sons goes down before the other one.
Okay.
So that's probably what it was.
The higher son. You said the second higher son.
Exactly. And one of them goes down first. So, you know, I don't know the timeline between when there's only one son up or not, but
yeah.
That son is right there where the port is that they need to take to go off and, you know, tell the rest of their syndicate that they're going to have to pay a toll. You know, there's all kinds of, you know, the guys are complaining, hey, we're going to die. And they said, no, you are now protected by the Tusken Raiders. As long as you pay your tolls and stuff, they have the protection of the Raiders so that they don't have to worry about being killed. And then, you know, we see all that. And then we see them gathering around a fire. And they start to celebrate their victory and everything and do a little dance. And everybody's going in circles and dancing and bonding and having a good old time. And that's pretty much our entire episode. That's kind of, I thought right there, you know, that whole
ritual. The whole... drinking other stuff and the lizard up the nose and him wandering.
We skipped that, didn't we?
Yeah.
That was when he was living with the sand people. So let's talk about that now since we skipped it. I forgot about that part. So, yes. So he gets the lizard and it goes up his nose. And I was like, whoa, what's going on there?
It will guide you.
It will guide you inside your head.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have notes on that. So it basically takes him to out in the desert and to a tree.
There were two trees.
Yeah, there was two trees there.
There was a small tree and a big tree.
And he goes to the big one, right?
He went for the big one, but the small one and the big one were supposedly for... Small one was for Bobo, and the other one was for his father.
I think so.
There was a subliminal flash. If you slow it down, there's a subliminal flash. And he went, he was seeing his father's face on the tree, and he went for that one.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's when he sees visions of Camino, and he sees his father leaving in the slave one ship that he has now, and he sees the oceans and stuff like that at the same time. And then the tree starts to close in on him and kind of grab him around him, and he breaks free and has a huge branch after that. And that's the branch he takes back to the tribe, and he presents it to the leader of the tribe and everybody else, and they immediately start to take him to someone off to the side that to help him craft a stick out of it, the Gaffrey stick.
Yep, I want one.
I want one too. That was pretty cool the way he carved it and all that stuff. And basically
the training one with just the ball on the end is like an actual African and Native American weapon.
Yeah, and then they add like an outer metal shell to it to make it stronger. Which, you know, the whole scene was interesting to see, you know, where the guy was teaching him how to make the stick and how to carve it and how to wrap it, and
yeah, you know, that was cool.
It's pretty nice. And then he takes it back and presents it to the chief and the chief of the Tuscans, and they basically are excited about it, and he kind of continues his training, I guess, after that, right?
Well, I guess in the middle of the night they robe him or whatever. You know, they give him his they give him his Tuscan clothing. So he's now
partially part of the clan.
Yeah, part of the clan.
Which is interesting because the Tuscan tradition is that it's kind of like what we see in the Middle East in area, at least for women, that is, but so that one of the Tuscan traditions is they're not supposed to expose their skin at all. And part of that is because it protects them from all the heat from those two suns. Right. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was interesting that Fett wasn't all the way covered. Sweat.
They collect their sweat. Yeah. Because they are like human. There are human under there.
Yeah. It's like a gauze type of material that wicks the sweat and all that stuff and keeps them cool. Yeah, and they are human, which is weird. You know, we hear the leader talk about the history and stuff like that. And, you know, apparently they're human and may have somehow be related to humans on Earth.
I think in one of the comic books, they have a rendering of what happened to them when that planet got raided and it got bombarded so bad and their people got so messed up that they went to cover themselves up.
They're gonna hide, like the guy was saying, they've been hiding for so long. Because someone figured out that there was something valuable on that planet to mine, and that ensued, a battle for, you know, the ability to mine on there, and that didn't go well for anybody, and that's how the Tuscans became the way they were, because they went into hiding to protect themselves, using the gauze and all that stuff to cover up and hide themselves as well, so they were anonymous, I guess you could say. One of the other interesting things that I heard when the leader was telling the story was that the Tuscans and the Jawas are closely related, very closely related. They're the same people, actually.
They're both scavengers.
Right. And I think, you know, they're both the same type of person. I think what it sounded like was originally they were all one group and somehow they split off. One has one philosophy and the other has a different philosophy, kind of thing. And of course, it looks like they're shorter too.
You saw when he brought the bikes back, they immediately tried to start taking them apart.
Like right, the Jawas. Yeah. Exactly. I saw that too. And the Tuscans do a little bit of that too. Tuscans have a more of a reputation of killing when they're raiding and stuff. The Jawas don't necessarily have that reputation because they're smaller and probably would have a harder time killing and stuff like that. So, but they do kind of the same thing. And I think they probably, like if the Tuscans come across something valuable, they probably go to the Jawas and sell it to them. And the Jawas go and sell it to whoever. Cause in my mind, that's what the Jawas do is they'll steal stuff and then resell it or whatever. Mm-hmm. Because they're the ones that stole Fett's armor when he came out of the pit, was the Jawas. And the Tuscans.
They're the ones that had CP3O and R2.
Right. That they sold to Luke and his uncle Owen or stepfather Owen or whatever.
Owen.
All right. So do you have any... from what you saw, do you have any more thoughts or predictions or what's going to come up in future episodes?
I think the Tuscans are going to be an integral part of Fett's plan for taking over.
I do too. I hope this next episode, we get more into the crime syndicate or crime family that he, because remember we keep seeing flashes of him around a big table with a bunch of, you know, other crime lords. I'm hoping we get to see that in this next episode. More of that, or at least more of him going out into the town and, you know, meeting people and stuff like that. I hope we get to see a lot more of that. And I think, like you said, I think they're building and they're hopefully the next episode will be even better than this last episode, you know?
Yeah. What stood out for me was the Wookiee.
The Wookiee's definitely going to be back. I can see that Wookiee coming back.
Yeah.
If not re-teaming up with Fett again later, there'll be some sort of big fight scene with it. I would guess maybe after the fight, they team up after that. Who knows? But we can we can kind of wrap this up if you want.
Okay.
Here we go.
Feedback at kylejohansen.us. That's kylejohansen.us. Please visit our website where you can play current and past episodes or learn how to load the Rebel Alliance Briefing Room podcast to your Android or Apple phone and tablet. We also have links to our socials and polls. That's https://rar.kylejohansen.us. That's rar.kylejohansen.us. We are here to discuss Star Wars with you. Please participate. This podcast in no way is approved, sponsored, or owned by Lucasfilms Ltd., Disney, Disney Plus, or any of its subsidiaries. All opinions are solely owned by Kyle and or Scott, and in no way express the views or opinions of their past or present employers. Views and opinions are not supported or restricted by Lucasfilms, Ltd., Disney, Disney Plus, or any of its subsidiaries. Any rebroadcast, reproduction, or other use of this podcast and its affiliate sites without consent of Super Duper Podcast Network, and its host is prohibited.
We want to thank you for listening to the Rebel Alliance Briefing Room Podcast. We look forward to your feedback and opinions about this week's topics.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye now.